The markets at midday, the Dow rallying more than 500 points. It's a rebound from the tech sector. The major averages were sharply higher today as tech stocks clawed back some of their steep declines from the previous three sessions. The scroll today has been above 500 on the Dow, and even the NASDAQ, which you can't believe sometimes can go much higher and took a beating yesterday, is back today. Now we're at 626. The Dow is up 626, and the NASDAQ is up 362. Greg McBride, that's not why we called you, but wow, what's your reaction to that?
Well, we, you know, had some downside volatility that was, I think, long overdue the past 3 days. And, you know, what you may see today is, just a reflection of, you know, some bargain hunting. You mentioned the NASDAQ. You know, the NASDAQ was actually in correction territory at yesterday's close, down 10% from the previous high. And that tends to bring buyers back into the market. So, a lot of the stocks that had been driving the rally over the last almost 6 months now, or some of those that really took a beating the last few sessions, and it's likely that there's some renewed interest at those lower prices relative to what we had seen late last week.
Yeah, I haven't heard anybody describe the NASDAQ at lower prices, but your point about 10% is well taken, although I do believe it closed off on the day over 4%, right? So it was kind of remarkable, and then it bounces back. I guess that's the market in 2020, isn't it?
Well, the other thing is, you know, the old adage, the market has a name, and that's TINA. There is no alternative. You know, with interest rates at rock bottom levels, there's just a lot of money that continues to find its way into the stock market because that's the one area where investors feel like they can get a rate of return in an otherwise near zero interest rate environment. And so you get any type of, brief pullback in prices, which, like I said, is normal. And if anything was overdue, investors are, already chomping at the bit to get back in.
Yeah.
You know, that being said, John, one in a row is not a streak. I mean, we'll have to see if this, if today's, rebound holds and, if it's something that's sustained or if, we're kind of just in a little bit of a mid-course correction and we have a little bit more downside volatility. I think from an investor's perspective, we're heading in. There's a lot of uncertainty out there, not only with the economy, but as we head closer to the election. So I would expect a lot of ups and downs. Those big numbers down yesterday, big numbers up today. I think we're going to see a lot more days like that between now and November. So it's important for investors to kind of buckle the seatbelts and bear that in mind to maintain that long-term perspective.
Greg McBride's on the line, a senior vice president and chief financial analyst for Bankrate.com. You also have on your website a story about Americans' savings and spending. What are you seeing there?
Well, one of the things that we had seen, we look at, particularly on the savings side, this is something we regularly take the pulse of consumers on and have for the better part of the last decade on a regular cadence. And, what we had noticed is that coming into the pandemic, which seems like 100 years ago now, but, we actually, had an economy that was entering the 11th year of expansion and unemployment was at a 50-year low. Well, the benefit of that is that we were seeing people move the needle on how much emergency savings that they had. And, that was really kind of a long time in coming. But, really no surprise, and unfortunately, we've given back some of that progress in the last 6 months with the pandemic. It's really done a number on the savings that people had relative to what they had coming into the pandemic. Still in better shape than they were this time last year. That's the plus, but obviously the longer this drags on, the more households that are going to be running down that savings because somebody's out of work or working reduced hours and the income isn't what it was.
I wonder if they've spent down their stimulus and they're missing the unemployment supplement as well.
Yeah, I think that's a part of it. I mean, when we asked, one of the things that we looked into, and we had done this poll just as the pandemic unemployment, that additional federal unemployment was expiring at the end of July. We did this poll last weekend of July 1st, part of August, And so what we found is that discomfort with savings was at a relatively high level. And I think a lot of that is, you know, people just not certain about how much money is going to be coming in the door in the months ahead, what they may or may not be getting in terms of assistance on that, on the unemployment front, and just how quickly they're going to be running down their savings. Well, and so we did see a pickup in terms of that discomfort people have with the money that they put away.
Well, I can imagine that. One last question for you about that, Greg, is the lack of savings. You write stunningly, 21% of Americans say they have no emergency savings, the lowest in the 10-year history of the Bankrate poll. Is that because they simply don't have the money or because they've lacked the discipline to save money? Would you wag your finger at these people and say, see, I thought you should have learned by now you need to save, or they know that full well, they just simply can't afford to save like they should? I wonder what it is.
Yeah. Well, you know, we had seen after the financial crisis, for example, is that people recognized that they didn't have enough. They knew they needed to do more. We saw a real attitude shift following the financial crisis. But what we didn't see, what was very slow to move the needle, was the people actually putting money away. That even as unemployment came down, for a lot of people, the stagnant wages really put a lid on their ability to make meaningful progress on savings. And so, I think there's this recognition, the widespread recognition, that people know that they need more, and that, you know, given the opportunity to save, they'll do so. But, you know, it's a lot easier to do when unemployment's at 3.5% and the economy's rocking and rolling than, you know, it is now when we got 28 million people out of work.
Greg McBride, Senior Vice President, Chief Financial Analyst, Bankrate.com. Nice to talk to you today, Greg. Thanks for your help.
Thank you, John. Appreciate it.
Wintrust Business Lunch continues now. Kathleen Jenkins is on a phone line. Kathleen, you're on WGN Radio. Welcome to the show.
Hey, good afternoon. How are you?
Good. You're the Director of Sales and Marketing for the Offshore Rooftop and Bar. That's out on Navy Pier, right?
That is correct.
And the word is the Navy Pier has shut down until next spring. We'll see what the reopening looks like. But you guys are still open, right?
We are still open, and we're going to be open for the foreseeable future here on the east end of the pier.
Describe that, because I've been there, and if you haven't, it really is worth the stroll down there or however you get to the end of Navy Pier. But tell people what that is like.
Sure. So with the pier being shut down, you can only access us via the north dock. So you could take a rideshare, park in the east garage, or just, you know, walk along the lakefront there. We're on the far end, kind of above where the beer garden is, next to the Grand Ballroom. So we're the most eastern, you know, venue, entertainment place on the pier. So we get those pretty spectacular views because you are three stories up that are unobstructed on either side. So you get that skyline from the north view as well as the south view.
So imagine that if the top of Navy Pier, it's the width of Navy Pier, and then looking north was the view I remembered so fondly. So you get to see in towards the city and then up the lake shore, and it's just a spectacular view, day or night. What a great place for a drink. What a great place for a nosh. Is the menu or the service changed at all, or is it still the same as it's been?
You know, we had to pivot a little bit with the, you know, the reopening guidelines. So maybe last summer when we first opened, folks just popped in for a drink. We're more of a classic restaurant now. We do take dinner reservations, lunch reservations. So we've had the opportunity to kind of expand our menu and make it more of a destination rather than just a walk-in for a quick cocktail or something like that.
Yeah.
So we've got some great new menu items, but, I mean, the views and the sunsets are like, I mean, they're second to none. They're really, you can't beat it.
And as I recall, maybe it's changed a little bit, but you had a lot of space there, even with reduced seating. What's your capacity? How many people can you accommodate?
Yeah, so on a nice, clear, you know, good weather day, our walls open on the side. So the whole building is, you know, kind of this indoor-outdoor capacity. At any one point, we could seat probably 250 to 300 guests with the outdoor dining at tables of six or less. And all of our tables are 6 to 8 feet apart, you know, for the reopening guidelines. So it's pretty special. Now, on a colder day like today, we could do up to 50 guests indoors.
So all the more reason to make reservations. In fact, you have to make reservations, right? You can't just stroll up.
You're welcome to stroll up, but I I kind of advise people, you know, if you're going to come this way all the way down here, you may as well make a reservation and guarantee yourself a table.
How hard is this going to be with Navy Pier closed? And do you support the decision to close Navy Pier? Did they have much of a choice?
You know, our team worked along with the pier to really work out an agreement that made sense for all of us. You know, we understand that, you know, they're doing what they need to do and what they think is best. But, you know, our investment here is not only offshore, but the hotel that we're just finishing up the project on. So, you know, for us, it's really important to stay open, and especially, you know, September, October, minus these couple of days, are fantastic weather, you know, usually. So we want our local following, which we've really developed this summer, to continue to enjoy.
What's the timeline for that hotel they were working on there?
So I'm mainly on the food and beverage side, but the plan is to open in November, as we've been, you know, that's been our target date for quite some time.
And I know this isn't your area, but would they open up the hotel in November if they were done, or are they going to wait until the spring, do you know?
The plan is for November.
Wow.
To open in November.
It's a great view. I remember the night they opened it up. I've been out there once since, and it's really, when you talk about what's a great place to look back at the city, you could get on a boat and go out, but you get on Navy Pier, you get to this place, you turn around, it's really just positively lovely. Oh, and by the way, food and beverage. So it's really a win-win. And if we ever needed something like this, now is the time. So you heard the Navy Pier temporarily closed, but remember, they are still open at the end of the pier there. Kathleen Jenkins, Director of Sales and Marketing for Offshore Rooftop and Bar. The website, right, is drinkoffshore.com?
Right, drinkoffshore.com. You can also follow us, you know, on Instagram and Facebook, Drink Offshore as well, for special events, you know, upcoming programming, things like that.
Tables are separated. You'll be asked to wear a mask when you're there. Those are the rules. We all know them. Good luck to you, and thanks for your time, Kathleen.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. Have a great one.
Yeah, we thought that would be helpful to know as you're planning some last-minute things this fall. And we want to champion every business that is still trying to make a go of it on the Wintrust Business Lunch at 12:35. Elise Glink joins us now. Do you go to thinkglink.com? You should. Hi, Elise.
Hey, how are you, John?
I'm doing fine. It's not like I got a lot of money in the market. I don't play the stocks. I each month put a little money away. But for some reason, when the Dow's up 636 and the NASDAQ is up 344 and the S&P's up 88, I'm in a better mood.
Well, you know, it's interesting how that just sort of inflates us, and then the other day when it was down 3 days in a row, deflates us, isn't it? It's all about psychological money more than anything else.
Kind of. And then, you know, maybe you do have real money in there, but then Orion Samuelson will say, well, then don't look. Unless you have to capture that loss, it's not a loss. Just let it ride, and maybe you'll prevail, right?
Well, I think the best thing to do is do what you do, which is put a little money in every single month right out of your paycheck. Make sure you hit the max for your company. Stick, you know, max your 401k. Keep plugging along and make sure that it's fully invested in something as opposed to just sitting around in cash. That actually is the great secret to building tremendous wealth, the kind of wealth you can retire on.
Especially if you're young and they do that multiplier, you know, if you just put this amount in for this many years at 7% or 6%, then over 20 years it grows to this other gigantic number. Time can be your friend, can't it?
It can. And here's the number that I really like to tell people. So if you start when you're 25 and you put away $2,000 a year from the time you're 25 to 35, right, that's a total of $20,000. And then if you don't put any more money away, but you leave it fully invested in the stock market, you'll end up with more money when you're 67 than if you start at 35 and carry on all the way through to 67 putting away money. That's the power of compounding interest.
Do that one more time. I heard you, but I think that's compelling. Do it again.
25 to 35, so you're 25 years old, you put away $2,000, 26 you do another $2,000, and so on. A total of $20,000 over 10 years. And then you don't put away any more money. You just let that $20,000 compound and compound and compound. You will have more money at 67 than if you start at 35 and you put away money all the way through until you're 67.
So if you've got a kid or a grandkid, maybe you are 26. You're welcome. Let's talk about jobs. Hiring has slowed right now. I thought that the employment factor was getting a little bit better, but slowly.
Well, one good piece of news that came out today is that there are more jobs available. So the number of people looking for people is up. That's 6.6 million, so that's terrific. But the amount of hiring that's going on is slowing down. And so this has to do with what the overall economic impact is. And think about Chicago, right? So Chicago, we have the great Navy Pier, and they announced the other day that Navy Pier was going to be closing for an indefinite leave, right? They're not going to open it anytime soon. Why they opened it? Nobody went. There's something like over 100 businesses at Navy Pier, and all of those are now closed. And I think the only thing that's going on at Navy Pier is probably WBEZ programming. But those jobs are jobs that are maybe they're not lost forever, but they're lost for now. And those companies won't be hiring new people. So what you're seeing is this kind of push-pull in the economy as we keep trying to open things up and then nobody shows up and things have to close down again. That's where we are today.
Rooftop Bar is open at Navy Pier. You can still go to the Rooftop Bar and get a meal and a drink there, but otherwise that and a radio station are all you got. Average American is spending $431 a month on groceries.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be more. I feel like with my two millennials living at home now that it would be more like $1,000 a month of groceries, because that sure feels like what I'm spending. But people are moving home. We have more millennials. You probably talked about this on your show this week. More millennials living at home now than at any point in time, except when they were all little kids, I guess. Something like 52% of millennials. It's up from 47%, the highest number in history. And it's actually a big burden on their parents. Their baby boomer parents were trying really hard to get ready to retire, and instead you've got extra costs coming in under the roof for their kids who have lost jobs or need to move home. And this has been really interesting to watch how this is changing over time.
So that comes to just under $5,200 a year for groceries. That's the average American right now. I wonder if that's average American household or average American. But, $431 a month on groceries. I'm sure we're spending more than that. It's nothing to have $200 in there, especially since eating and drinking is kind of the way we're recreating, too. So it's not just food. It's something to do, right?
It is. I also wonder, although the statistic is new, right, the study was just released, I wonder how much of that was done before we started down this pandemic trail, because one of the things that we've seen in this country is food insecurity has gone through the roof, and the number of people in the SNAP program, which is the government's sort of food supplemental program, food stamps, right? That program, the demand has absolutely gone through the roof. And if you look at what's going on at food pantries across the country, the lines have just been incredible. The one that I volunteer at in Highwood, Illinois, up the road piece from the North Shore, they used to serve, and probably have shared this with you, about 150 families every other week. They're now up to close to 400 every week. And it's a big change.
Yeah, it's kind of heartbreaking to see those families in those cars lined up in my neighborhood, too, and we didn't used to have one there at all. It's 1242, thinklink.com. Stay there, Lisa. I've got more questions for you, particularly about those millennials living at home and the impact that's having on families. Thinklink.com. Also, Anna DeVlantis will swing through and preview her show for us in a few minutes. Right now, Steve Grzanich has more business news.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. New figures suggest renters are leaving downtown Chicago. Crane Chicago Business reports net rents at the most expensive downtown buildings fell 12.4% in the second quarter compared to last year. Class B rents dropped 14.9%. The story suggests coronavirus and civil unrest is playing a role in renters' decision to leave. North Shore Health System says a data breach may have exposed information on nearly 350,000 patients. The information includes names, Birth dates, phone numbers, and dates of treatment, medical records were not accessed. The vendor hit by the breach says no financial information or passwords were compromised. And Mayor Lightfoot is warning that there could be layoffs among city workers without revenue replacement money from the federal government. The mayor says tough choices will need to be made in order to erase a projected 2021 budget deficit of more than $1 billion. She didn't say how many city employees might be affected, but she did note negotiations with organized labor to identify specific areas for cuts have started. Lightfoot has blamed the COVID-19 pandemic for most of the budget shortfall. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Orion Samuelson's looking at the agribusiness scene. It's your turn, O.
Okay, while the stock market has had its ups and downs, it's been relatively quiet in the agricultural markets. Looking at the current numbers, the September wheat contract is up 2.25 cents a bushel. September corn contract is up just 0.75 cents a bushel. And the September soybean contract showing the best performance, it's up 6.5 cents a bushel. Livestock futures, Chicago Mercantile Exchange. Today we find the October lean hog contract up $1.75 a hundredweight, but the October live cattle contract is down $1.35, and the October feeder cattle contract is down $1.57 a hundredweight. We continue to get a look at the damage caused by that derecho about 3 weeks ago as we look at crop conditions in Iowa, the number one corn state in the nation, and soybean conditions. The latest numbers on the soybean conditions show that 81% in Wisconsin were in the good to excellent category, 81%. But then take a look at Iowa. Only 47% of their crop was in good to excellent condition. Pretty much go over to the, well, both corn and the soybean sides. President Trump and his administration has instructed that dozens of oil refiner requests for retroactive waivers from U.S. biofuel laws be denied amid concerns the issue could cut into support for him in the Farm Belt. The move in the form of a direction to the Environmental Protection Agency marks the end of an effort by the refining industry to come into compliance with a January court decision that said the administration should not have given out some waivers in previous years. So that maybe is some positive news for corn growers and the refineries that produce biodiesel and corn in ethanol. Looking at exports to China, they continue to be active, but not enough, say observers, to meet the requirements of the Phase One trade agreement. The market today at USDA announced 132,000 tons of soybeans to unknown destinations. That's corn and, no, that's soybeans. And soybeans also 238,000 tons to unknown destinations, but that generally ends up being to China. That's your money on 720 WGN.
Elise Glink joins us on the Wintrust Business Lunch. We're talking with Elise about a lot of times real estate. And Elise, you just said something a moment ago about the percentage of kids. Well, it's not kids, it's young adults that are still living with their parents, right?
Yeah, almost 3 million adults moved home since the start of the coronavirus pandemic. 3 million. I just have to give you this number, John. 32 million adults living with their parents or grandparents in April, highest number on record.
And we used to judge that. You know, Kathy and Judy here, you really used to sort of shake their finger at people that were still propping up their kids after they should have left home by now. I understand that conversation, but I don't think we're judging those families these days. If a kid is in debt or doesn't have a job, help them out. And even if they're on the edge but just want to try and save, this is me personally, I sure don't see the harm in any of that.
I don't either. And it's kind of interesting because having your children come home, you know, I think is very comforting in a very scary, panicked time. And I can tell you, so many of my friends who actually have grandchildren, their children are older than ours, they wish they could see their grandchildren, but their kids are like, no, we're not seeing anybody. We're just, you know, we're just wearing our masks and hanging out with the kids. And they wish that they all live together. So it's sort of interesting. But on the real estate front, 80% of those who have recently moved back in with their parents are Gen Zers. So they're kind of 18 to 23 years old. And they normally would pay rent, almost $800 million a month in rent. And those payments could be at risk now that, you know, those kids have moved back home for a while. Maybe they won't move out for a while. And then you get a this kind of waterfall effect on tenants, commercial property tenants, but also residential tenants who have moved out and aren't paying their rent.
Hadn't thought about it that way, but yes, yeah, somebody else would normally be renting to them. So now the condos, the apartments, the houses, those are suddenly a little more stressed, aren't they? The rental market.
They're vacant. What we heard in the news break, of course, is that the amount of rent that people are paying is dropping significantly, and that's starting to show up in Chicago as renters are moving to the suburbs. And I know millennial renters who have left the city and are now living with their parents out in the suburbs. But you're also seeing it in cities across the country, New York, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Boston, Miami, places where people don't want to live right now so close to each other, and they are hightailing it out, sometimes way out, going to the rural areas.
Do you hold hope out that this is a one-off? It's not every day we have a pandemic. A vaccine will come along. This thing will run some sort of course. And at some point, people will want to come back into the cities, want to come back into the offices.
You know, it's interesting. I'm not sure anybody ever thought what a pandemic would look like and how it would affect them personally. And I do think that as a lot of people never have really gotten over the Great Recession and 9/11, we're coming up on that anniversary right now, 19 years. I think that's left some very serious scars. I'm sure that, you know, next week we're going to talk about where we were. I'm going to be filling in for you, I think, on the 11th, and I'm sure we'll talk this week. We'll talk about where we were. And I also think the Great Depression left tremendous scars. I don't know, because I'm not, this isn't my area of expertise, but if I had a guess, I'd say everybody's going to be pretty scarred by this pandemic and having a second big recession on the back of the Great Recession. I'm not so sure we're going to come back to the cities quite as quickly as we would all hope that we would.
But 9/11 might be instructive, right? Because talk about a one-off event. That doesn't happen every day. But this year, you didn't see it coming. Oh, yeah, it's the 9th. Oh, what do you know? The 9/11 anniversary is coming up. That in time, you do move on. And so, you know, the idea that I was having a conversation yesterday with somebody about the future of cities. And this is a person that lives in St. Louis, which is not Chicago. St. Louis downtown, not a lot of fun to be, although there are some features, some attractions you would go to. But Chicago, like a New York, like a San Francisco, like a Washington, D.C., is a city that you will go to and spend time in, shopping and dining. It's a destination unto itself, not just the
arts.
It's
a lifestyle.
It is.
It's a lifestyle, right?
Right. And so I wonder, is Chicago going to come back? I walked to the L yesterday after the show. Nobody was at the intersections. Nobody. And I'm hoping and I'm believing that that's temporary.
Well, we have to solve a couple of problems. You know, vaccines are one piece of the puzzle, but we also have to make our citizens feel safe to walk on the street. And when you have, you know, hit jobs on Oak Street, that doesn't go a long way towards making people feel like it's safe to walk around. That's another problem we have to get over.
Elise Glink, thinkglink.com, and thanks for filling in for me when I take off on Friday.
It's a pleasure. Talk to you soon, John.
Thanks, Elise. Anna DeVlantis just strolled into the studio. By the way, Terry Savage normally joins us on Wednesdays. Wasn't able to do so today. Hey, Pete, so Terry is going to be on what day? Next week, next Wednesday. We'll give Terry her due because she's terrific.